Putting up to, it's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome to the latest Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week are two of my most valued and trusted colleagues, Hannah Roger, who's the chief reporter of the Sunday Mail, and the Scottish Daily Express's editor, Ben Borland. So, Scottish politics can, on occasion, be quiet, and then it is inevitably interrupted by a big story. That's what happened this week, I would say. Jason Leach, who is the National Clinical Director inside the Scottish Government, he was one of the main figures in the pandemic. He was side by side with Nicola Sturgeon during those daily press conferences. He was a weekly fixture on Off the Ball. He's going to be leaving his post in April, and he doesn't have a job to go to, which is always a bit of a red flag. And anyone who's followed Mr. Leach of late will remember that he was one of the figures embroiled in the WhatsApp deletion scandal. And he famously said that deleting WhatsApps was a bedtime ritual. So he's off-ski now. So Hannah, what are your thoughts on the departure of Jason Leach?
Well, I think it's a bit of a fall from grace for him because he was used to being the sort of golden boy for a long time. Or at least I'm sure he thought of himself that way. But I think, you know, speaking to people since the COVID inquiry and all the stuff that came out about him, you know, on WhatsApp and advising Hamza essentially how to kind of avoid the rules around wearing masks, etc., you know, there was speculation that he was going to have to leave the role at some point. But I think, you know, I don't think this is a particularly good look for Hamza Yousaf because, and we might go on to talk about this later, but, you know, if you compare it to Michael Matheson, right, where you've got people who've been found to have done something that, you know, and to the public is not necessarily going to be acceptable, and yet nothing happens to them, and then, you know, things maybe die down a little bit and then they decide to just leave of their own accord. This seems to be a bit of a pattern, and I think it would actually have looked more kind of authoritative from Hamza's perspective if he actually asked Jason Leach to leave when all this had come out in the first place. It almost seems like, you know, I don't know what you guys think, but I feel like maybe there was some discussion that took place prior to him announcing this standing down, you know, maybe when the original accusations came out, and because I don't really understand the timing of it otherwise.
Do you think, Anna, that it was ultimately because of the WhatsApp scandal, or do you think that he'd been in post for around a decade and just fancies a fresh challenge, that sort of thing?
Nah, I don't think he fancies a fresh challenge, no. I think it's who knows? This is just my opinion, right? But I think it is directly linked to what happened in the WhatsApp, the COVID inquiry with the WhatsApps, because what else is it going to be? As you said, he's not got a job to go to. So, you know, and certainly when it was announced, it wasn't like it was announced because he's leaving for personal reasons or, you know, family or whatever. There was no explanation really given. So I think that's quite telling as well. But no, I definitely think it's something to do with the COVID inquiry. And I think that Hamza's allowed him to leave rather than get rid of him.
Ben, how do you think history will judge Jason Leach in terms of his role as National Clinical Director, obviously with an emphasis on the pandemic?
The tricky one with Jason Leach, I think I probably know more about him than many people out there. We at The Express, we've been reporting on Jason Leach for years, pre-pandemic, and his role in the NHS in Scotland and in the Scottish Government, and his links in particular with an American firm called the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. We're saying that there's no job that he's going to, I would bet good money that he ends up at the IHI, the Harvard-based firm that has a huge role in the NHS and social care and throughout the public sector in Scotland. Now, whether that's a good role, many people would say, you know, it's a good organisation, it does good things around the world, but it certainly has a huge level of influence that most people aren't fully aware of. Professor Leach has been at the conferences in Orlando every year. He's a regular speaker. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up at the IHI. I think also that might explain a little about the timing of his departure, the Express, we revealed his rather unusual employment arrangements. He's on secondment from NHS Tayside and has been since day one. These secondments are usually quite a short-term thing. He's been on secondment since he joined the Scottish Government. The impact of this is that nobody actually knows what his salary is. Nobody knows what his expenses are. He doesn't have to declare interests.
That is a bit strange. I mean, do you think
the papers were digging into this? You know, there's the whole Al Jamel thing. I think he's gone because there are far more skeletons in Jason Leach's closet that are yet to come out. And once he's out of post, then people will stop digging. Personally, I think that's a big excuse me. Obviously, the WhatsApps were terrible. Had he not made these admissions about the WhatsApps, I don't think he would be leaving. But I think I personally think he's going because of the, you know, just to stop the sort of investigation into his role.
Do you not think, though? I mean, clearly the WhatsApp deletions were an absolute disgrace, and he came out of that really badly, given some of the flippant and annoying comments he made. But in terms of lockdown and the pandemic, was he not overwhelmingly a force for good?
I think, I mean, my mum down in England used to be very jealous. She used to say, I watch the Scottish briefings and I really like that Jason Leach. He definitely had a kind of common appeal. He had a common touch. He came across as quite a personable, likeable bloke. You know, he was on off the ball. He was talking about football. He definitely had, and he, you know, he was always very positive compared to the, you know, the Dr. Doom, Patrick Vallance, and you know, the obviously Boris Johnson was probably overly positive, but then the experts in England were very, very negative. Jason Leach seemed to strike a balance there. However, I think the issue perhaps is that he is, and I mean, clearly he's got far more medical knowledge than I have, but he's a dental surgeon. He's not an expert in epidemiology or virology. And this was the problem. None of the Scottish Government advisors were. Catherine Calderwood was a gynaecologist. Greg Smith was a GP. And Jason Leach was a dentist. So Nicola Sturgeon imposed these really tough and much tougher than the rest of the UK restrictions without really getting advice from people who were experts in the spread of viruses.
And
that's my view.
I mean, clearly there's a mixed range of views on Jason Leach. I thought it was interesting, some of the messages that did come out during the COVID inquiry. He was critical of opposition politicians, and he was also critical of Nicola Sturgeon as well in a message to Humza Yousaf. I think when Nicola gave Humza a flea in his ear about proposing cuts. And that did kind of shock me, because you don't normally see things from civil servants or government figures where they're criticising the actual politicians. Do you think that he had maybe one foot in politics and one foot in his job?
I think that he has a very big mouth and he likes to gossip. That's my answer. I don't know if it's, you know, he fancied himself as a politician or anything like this, but, you know, he does, he does like a bit of gossip, and he does, you know, he does like to chat. And I think that he probably, you know, get caught up in a lot of that. And, you know, even try to discuss, I'm sure, what he was trying to discuss some lockdown restrictions or something with Nicola Sturgeon via Twitter message. I mean, it just seems like he had his communication priorities, or sort of, it was just a bit mixed up, you know, because anyone looking at that would be like, you can't DM Nicola Sturgeon and say, oh, here, can we impose bigger, more restrictions on, you know, Dundee because of this football game or whatever. You can't do that. And I just think maybe he got a bit carried away with his communications.
So would you reckon maybe SNP MSP, could you see that? Jason Leach MSP?
No.
Ben?
No, I'm convinced he will be part of this sort of international health. You know, he'll be speaking at conferences for many years to come.
I bet he does the after dinner circuit as well. I could see him on that. He'd be pretty good at that, actually, that sort of
laid-back
style he's got.
Yeah, he does seem like a very personable guy, but maybe that's the fact that he wasn't actually a civil servant. He was a doctor on secondment, so he maybe never went through the civil service training, and he's taken this very flippant, inappropriate style, and it's now all emerged, you know, thanks to his WhatsApps.
All right, let's say goodbye, Jason.
Found out if he hadn't deleted them all.
Moving on from Jason Leach then, another set of horror drug death statistics. A couple of days ago shows them on the rise yet again. Now, this is despite the fact that a national emergency has been called. It's one of the government's top priorities. Hannah, what's your reaction? There just seems to be a sense of inevitability these days that the figures are going to go up.
Yeah, you know, I think this national emergency, it's kind of like councils declaring a climate emergency yet continuing to vote through, you know, policies and plans that will do nothing to help the climate. These sorts of declaring an emergency, it might get a good headline. It might, at least from a politician's point of view, they may believe that it's going to make the public think that they're taking it seriously. We cannot get away from the raw numbers, you know, and quite clearly not enough is being done about it. And the fact that they've gone up once again, in spite of the government's efforts, is really worrying, because you think, well, if the government weren't doing at least some of the things that they're trying to do now, if they weren't doing all those, what would the figures be? You know, would it be even higher? Or is it the fact that the government interventions aren't actually having any difference, making any difference? And also, I think, you know, unfortunately, with the lack of funding everywhere, councils, NHS, etc., I worry that this problem's only going to keep getting worse. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think that clearly what is happening now is not working well enough.
What do you make of the churn of ministers as well, Hannah? I think we had Joe Fitzpatrick. He was a disaster in the job. We had Angela Constance, Eleanor Whittam, now Christina McKelvey.
Yeah.
It seems to be a conveyor belt of ministers taking on this brief and failing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, is that part of the problem, that they don't want to do that? Maybe they, you know, either they don't want to do the job, or they don't, when they get in the job, they realise that they, you know, there's not a lot that they can do to make a difference. Or, but I think that is part of the problem as well. There needs to be a strong leadership from the top, and there needs to be a sort of concise plan. And as you say, if you're going to have this constant sort of roundabout of ministers, then there's not going to be enough direction going on.
Ben, I mean, there's no one policy that's going to turn this around. There's some deep-seated social and economic issues at the heart of it as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Because I mean, Nicola Sturgeon famously said that the government had taken its eye off the ball when it came to drug deaths. It doesn't seem like they've actually put their eye on the ball since.
Well, a few thoughts. First up, I think it's the anti-overdose pen and that's been rolled out to police officers and ambulance crews and really quite widely now, that naloxone seems to have been a policy that has been successful. I dread to think what these figures would be if police officers weren't out there administering life-saving overdoses on a fairly regular basis. A second point, which is something that's been raised time and time and time again, but never really seems to enter the political discourse in any sort of meaningful way, is the fact, and this is, you know, an academic fact, it's not just me saying it as the editor of The Express, that there's a link between these drug deaths and minimum unit pricing. If you're in a situation where you're desperate, you're kind of, you're looking for an escape from daily life. Once upon a time, you could buy a very cheap bottle of booze. It's a fact now that you're turning to the 50p street volumes, and you know that has coincided with the huge surge in deaths.
What sort of link are you making there?
Well, the link is that you're out of work, you're in a deprived part of town, you looking for escape from sort of daily reality. We've swapped problem drinkers for problem drug takers, because a bottle of Frosty Jack cider that elsewhere in the UK costs £3 now costs 12 or 13.
Minimum pricing has contributed to the...
Yeah, it's not a controversial thing to say. I mean, anyone watching this could, you know, Google it. You'll see that everyone from academics to people who work on the front line make that connection. It's the cheap booze has been replaced by cheap pills. That's just.
I think I'd like to see the studies on that before I make a definitive judgment.
As I say, it hasn't made it through to Holyrood, but there's certainly people out there who say that. I mean, Anne-Marie Ward, the drugs campaigner, off the top of my head, is someone who subscribes to this theory. Obviously, it's not the only factor, but it's a factor, and it's just routinely ignored. And then I think the third thing is, you know, that the SNP have tried, liberal responses to this. They've tried legalising drugs. They've tried supervised drug injection facilities. That may or may not...
I don't think they've tried legalisation.
Well, of decriminalisation.
Yeah. Which is the big difference between, you know, there is a difference between
decriminalisation. One thing that I'm not advocating for, this, but this is one approach that has worked in other parts of the world, is to get very, very tough.
We tried that for decades. I remember in the 90s, we had political leaders.
In the 90s, you didn't have 1,200 people dying every year.
No, but we still had a massive problem to the extent, I remember Alex Salmond, Jim Wallace, Michael Forsyth, putting on baseball caps and going on the dance floor telling kids to just say no. And guess what? They ignored them. You know? I think drugs are a fact of life.
I don't think that trio going on the dance floor wearing baseball caps, people would probably think they'd taken something if they saw that.
Frankly, it looked like they were on drugs. It was such a ludicrous thing. But my point is, drugs are a fact of life for an awful lot of people. We can pretend that doesn't exist. We can poo-poo it. We can point our fingers, but they do exist. Surely a harm reduction approach is a much better way of going about it than, you know, stamping it out and maybe criminalising people.
20 years in prison for street Valium dealers. If you're caught with more than 10.
Yeah, well, no, I think...
Yeah, 1 year for every
pill. Most sensible people make a distinction between drugs for personal use and actual drug suppliers, drug dealers. I mean, is there any suggestion that if you're caught with cannabis or some of these drugs for personal use, you should go to jail? I don't see how that would be a positive.
Well, no, but the point is that there's different... Obviously, cannabis isn't really impacting this. You talked about, you know, Alex Salmon with a baseball cap going... Party drugs aren't really impacting. The drugs that are killing people are heroin, the street Valium pills, and a huge array of prescribed drugs that people are getting either over the counter and then passing on, or they're being produced illegally. And finally, methadone. You know, a lot of these drugs that are killing people are actually supplied to them by the state.
A lot of people hold down regular, steady lives with methadone.
I do have, you know, issues with cannabis, but I don't think you'd find many cannabis deaths in the figures. I don't think you'd find all that. I mean, again, I'm not advocating for this, but I think the kind of recreational drugs, ecstasy and so on, aren't behind this huge number. There are a handful of tragedies every year, and I'm certainly not saying that they're safe to take or anything, but the problem drugs are in a small number of categories, and a lot of them, when you go through the spreadsheet that gets released when the drug figures are out, there's a spreadsheet that includes all the deaths and the cocktail of drugs taken by each and every person. And they are, most people will have four or five in the system. And yeah, a lot of them
do,
have
these people have access to help and treatment?
A lot of them have these street pills.
Yeah, but how much access to help and treatment do these people have? I would say not much, which is as a result of Scottish Government cuts. You know, they need treatment, they need help, they don't need a criminal record.
Well, but the dealers, I'm saying, that's where you crack down.
I don't think anyone wants a go slow policy on drug dealers. Okay, completely different subject, Hannah. This was a splash in another newspaper at the weekend. We don't often talk about hardcore sex films on Planet Hollywood, so this is a first. It seems like Creative Scotland funded an explicit sex film to the tune of about 80 grand. And just reading some of the detail, which was delicious, people are going to be paid £270 to take part. I'm not sure if that includes travel expenses. Following a furore, Creative Scotland investigated it, and now they've pulled the plug. What do you make of this rather scuzzy, horrible little episode?
Well, it raises questions about how did that decision get made to award this porn project?
That was the word I was looking for, yes.
Yeah. £85,000. I mean, you know, at a time when what we've just said, there's people, organisations, councils, people, you know, in need of housing, food, drugs, support, you know, all screaming out for money, for services and things. And then you've got Creative Scotland funding an 85 grand porn film. I mean, I just want to know how that decision was made. But also, do you remember, not that they're in any way similar in terms of the projects, but do you remember a few years ago there was a woman and she was paid something like 20 grand to do a project, and the project was to stay in Glasgow for a year?
God, yeah. Oh, absolutely hated that.
You know, and it's like...
Exactly.
like, I wonder how easy it is to get funding for these sorts of things. Like, could I get funding if I just made some artsy, fartsy application and really I wasn't actually doing anything? I was just going about my business and going to work and things. I don't know.
It seems like what was put in the application then grew arms and legs, so to speak, and Creative Scotland might have been unaware as to the exact detail of what the money was going for. But again, that's a failure of the quango.
But that's what I mean, though. Like, if you put forward a proposal, what checks are there that actually the money that you've applied for and you've received are being used for that?
You know, zero.
Yeah.
Ben, obviously, you know, for instance, if you wanted to film a hardcore sex movie, that's entirely up to you. But the question is public money. You know, why are
aye, well, that's
taxpayers going to fund this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's clearly not an appropriate use of taxpayers' cash. It's, I see just before we came on air, Creative Scotland's cancelled the funding now.
Yeah.
It's going to try and claw back what's been paid out already. I don't know. I mean, this is it's an entertaining story, but is it any more inappropriate than some of the rubbish that gets produced by artists in Scotland using Creative Scotland money? I mean, I don't know much about it. No, I mean, come on, most of these projects are absolute mince.
Aye, but they're not porn.
No, but.
Are
they any less deserving of public money? I'm sure the artist had a very good sort of rationale for what this was going to be about. It wasn't just a hardcore porn movie. It was an exploration of sexuality in modern Scotland. I don't know.
I'm sure there was shagging outside in the Highlands. That's what just absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah. Well,
I think if you went through the Creative Scotland funding grants each month, you'd probably find lots of things that are equally undeserving.
Maybe we're just a bunch of philistines and we just don't understand art.
Well, I do. I understand art.
No, probably not. I don't know.
Do you think, what do you make of Ben's point, Hannah? Do you think, is that a bit harsh? Do you think that, by and large, Creative Scotland does a good job with the things they fund?
Oh, look, don't ask me that. I don't know. It's not like I sit and monitor what Creative Scotland funds and what it doesn't.
You're our in-house arts expert.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying, like, obviously art is is subjective, right? Now, most of us would agree that porn is not an art project. It's entertainment, but it's not like an artistic project that we would consider worthy of funding. Whereas, you know, if I went and saw an exhibition of sculpture, we would all probably agree that that's artistic, even if I liked it and Ben didn't like it. He might not think that that is value for money, and I would, but I think we can all agree that a porn is not an artistic project. You know, I do think that, you know, I remember writing a story about that in the Down the Rabbit Hole Festival, which obviously has been cancelled and, you know, lots of people were not paid, etc. I've written quite a few stories about them. But they received Creative Scotland funding as well. And I'm pretty sure they received Creative Scotland funding after one of the events, you know, after the company running one of the previous events had already gone bust. And so I think there needs to be more careful. There needs to be kind of stricter controls and scrutiny over who is getting this money and who's behind it, especially at a time when, you know, you can't be kind of throwing money away.
I just hope I never have to read about this crap again. Just move on.
Well, it's better than the Willy Wonka.
Well, thankfully that didn't seem to have any sort of political angle, so we didn't have to go there either. We were going to talk about Operation Branch Form, but I think we're running out of time a little bit. Do you
well, the summary is just... Well, the summary is just that it's still continuing and more people are being questioned. And would the police please hurry up and do something?
Journalists are getting impatient. This is the message that we'd like to convey. It does well for clicks. And, you know, let's face it, that's one of the main things in this.
Mm.
So, good week, bad week. Let's start with you, Hannah.
My bad week is, Diane Abbott, of course. She has had an absolutely rotten week. You know, she's been the subject of racist abuse. Then she wasn't allowed to even speak during Prime Minister's questions, and she wasn't accepted, you know, to speak in the chamber. And then she still hasn't had the Labour whip restored, even though there's been mounting, you know, pressure on Keir Starmer to do that. I just think, you know, just to be subject to that sort of level of scrutiny and everyone talking about you and yet you're not really able to talk about it yourself is pretty rough. And my good week is sub-postmasters in England and Wales, but sadly not for people in Scotland. So that is because the UK government have, you know, put forward their sort of emergency legislation for kind of mass exonerations of people who were convicted and their compensation scheme, etc. But unfortunately, the Scottish government are kind of too busy kind of arguing with Westminster, I guess, about it. So the sub-postmasters affected up here are still basically in limbo about what's happening with their compensation, which I think is a disgrace.
Ben, good week, bad week?
It's been a good week for George Orwell. I think the other big story of the week for me has been the news that the Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act will be enforced from April the 1st. Orwell obviously spoke about the thought police and various other things in 1984. It's taken 40 years longer than he predicted, but I think Scotland will take another step towards that on April 1st. The hate crime legislation, there was a huge row when it was passed. I mean, it seems ages ago now. And then it kind of went onto the statute books and we all sort of forgot about it a bit. And Branch Form came along and the Supreme Court and lots of other things. And we kind of forgot that Holyrood had passed this incredible kind of attack on the freedom of expression and the freedom of speech. But here we are, 3 years later, it's finally going to be enforced. The police are going to investigate every single report where someone says that they've been offended under one of the new protected characteristics. At the meantime, 1 in 20 traditional crimes are not going to be investigated. I think this is going to be huge. I genuinely think this is another named person type scandal that's going to haunt the SNP for a long, long time. And staying on that subject, bad week for J.K. Rowling, slightly tongue-in-cheek, because she was reported to the police in England by India Willoughby after J.K. described India, who's a trans woman, as a man. Northumbria police were very quick to say that no crime had been committed, but it seems quite clear that under the legislation enforced from April 1st, Police Scotland may have a different view. So J.K. and all those gender-critical campaigners are desperately afraid that they're going to be pursued for hate crimes for stating biological facts after that date.
Just a brief interjection. The Scottish Parliament has just issued a press release confirming that Michael Matheson, the former Health Secretary, has breached the Code of Conduct over iPad Gate. So that is quite a big story as well. And I think they're referring it to the relevant Holyrood Committee. So maybe bad week.
You want to give us some more?
Should you go back and do this again?
Yeah.
Yes, well, I'm just looking at the press release just now, and it says the corporate body concluded its investigation into the complaints this morning. He's breached various sections of the code of conduct, and three complaints have been upheld, and now it's being referred to the committee, which will decide on any sanctions. But they're not reporting they're not publishing the report at this stage. So
why are they not publishing the report?
I think that they're handing it to the Holyrood committee that's now going to be launching its own investigation.
Oh, come on.
The story that never dies.
Just release the bloody report. Like, it's already designed, you know.
So what could the sanctions be? Presumably suspension from Holyrood?
I think there's a lot of flexibility in sanctions. But this story...
He's not going to stand down as an MSP, though, is he?
No.
I'm not sure if that would end the investigation. If you're no longer... I'm not sure about that. It's an interesting point. But look, that's quite a big development. It's not a satisfactory outcome. Clearly, we all want to read the report and to get more detail on what exactly the breaches are, but that's where we are. So I better go and write that story. Thank you to Hannah and to Ben for joining me today on Planet Holyrood. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and please join us again next week.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.